I just want to remind you to turn off your cell phones or put them in silent mode, please. Our first presenter in this session is Benjamin Jarvet from Rice University, and he will be speaking on using distributed version control systems to improve project management and collaboration.
All right. So the title is long and scary, but hope we're going to try and take it a sort of a bird's eye view of the systems I'm going to be talking about. So the impetus for my research was the fact that there's been a big push on emphasizing collaborative workflows in linguistics lately, but the software hasn't really kept up with that. So a lot of the tools that we use don't really facilitate collaborative workflows as much as we might like them to. So with this talk, I'm going to be sort of comparing software development tools and sort of how software developers use a type of system called distributed version control systems to manage their source code, and how we can use similar systems in linguistics to manage our own data. So an outline for the talk, I'm going to talk first about why we should look at software development, sort of what we have in common with it, what are some of the differences we have with it, why should we look at software development in the first place. And then I'm going to do a brief overview of different types of version control systems. So I'm going to talk about local version control systems, and then talk about centralized version control systems. And then getting to the heart of the matter, I'm going to talk about distributed version control systems, which have been developed in the last 10 or so years. I'm going to sort of say at a really abstract level, I'm not really going to get into how to use like certain commands or specific commands with these programs, because I only have 20 minutes. But I am going to talk about some sort of the three major features, the killer features, I suppose, of these systems. So I'm going to talk about cloning, branching and merging, and then network independence. After that, I'm going to talk about some challenges with distributed version control systems. And then if I have time at the end, I'm going to talk about which ones you might want to look at the most. So first up, why should we look at software development at all? At first glance, it doesn't seem like software development is all that similar to language documentation. But if you look at it, it actually kind of is. So the one way it's similar is that software developers have similar challenges. They often have a lot of people working on the same sorts of files at the same time. So if we're doing a collaborative workflow in language documentation, we're going to have people working on the same dictionary files, same audio files, et cetera. So we need software that facilitates working on files at the same time. At the same time, software developers or programmers generally work with text files. And most of our data in linguistics is stored in XML files, which is a type of text file. So the tools that they use, the tools that programmers use, can be used to manage our own XML data. Or similar data like toolbox, plain text files. And then lastly, another similarity is that software developers and language documenters alike both have a vested interest in sort of being able to look at everything leading up to the current state of a project. In software development, it's really useful to look at things leading up to it because of bugs. If you have a bug in the system, you want to work it back. And sort of similar things for language documentation. If you have an analysis that doesn't seem to be working, you can sort of trace it back and see where it went wrong and maybe change it from there. And then the big reason to look at software development and the tools that I'm talking about in this discussion is that it works. So the projects and companies on this slide, so Android, Microsoft, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google, Netflix, the Linux kernel, and Twitter, they all use the type of software that I'm going to be talking about in this presentation. And so these are huge projects with people scattered all over the world. They have tens or hundreds of programmers working on the same files at the same time. And the software that I'm going to be talking about lets them do that. So by comparison, the language documentation collaborative workflows that we use, we're not going to be anywhere near that scale. So the tools that we use should be able to scale down. So backing up a little bit, what is a version control system in the first place? For the purpose of this talk, I'm going to define version control system as any software that tracks changes to files over time. So if you've ever used like the track changes feature in Microsoft Office, or the revision history tool in Google Docs, or if you have Dropbox, you can look at previous versions of files. Those are all sort of versions of version control. But the software that I'm going to be talking about here differs from sort of Microsoft Office, Google Docs approach, is that instead of editing the data directly like you do in Microsoft Office, you use normal tools. So you use Flex, you use Elan, you use Toolbox to edit the data, and then you use the version control system to track the changes that are made by those programs. So the version control sort of wraps around a folder or a set of files and tracks the changes. You don't edit the files directly with version control. So I'm going to talk about three basic types of version control. The first one is local, which was sort of the historically the oldest version of version control. Then I'm going to talk about centralized, and then I'm going to talk about distributed. But before I get there, I'm going to talk about the basic workflow that's common to all version control systems. So the first step is basically what you do now. You work, you fire up Flex or Elan or Toolbox, whatever software you want to use. You edit some files, you upload some audio, what have you. You save your files. So you probably do that now. I'm hoping you edit files. The next, where it differs, or where it starts to differ with version control, is in the next one, is in the next part, where you stage your files. So in this part, you tell the version control, these are the files that I've changed, these are the ones I want you to look at, pay attention to only these files. And then once they're staged, you commit them to the version, to the, it's called a repository, the thing that has all the changes that are made to a file or a file folder. So you work on files, you stage them, you tell the version control what you want to look at, and then you commit them. So this is sort of the basic structure that's common to all version control systems, the basic workflow. It gets a little bit more complicated, as we'll see, as we move from local to centralized to distributed, but that's the general thing. So historically, back in the late 60s or 70s, when computer programming really started taking off, people realized that they needed a way to keep track of the changes they made to their software. So they developed local version control systems, which exist on one computer, and they keep track of files only on a single computer. So it works really well if you're the only person on a project, but as soon as you add someone else in, it doesn't work. There's really no way to collaborate with a local version control system. So I'm not really going to spend too much time talking about that. The next major step in version control systems was centralized. So these ones, instead of storing all the file change histories on a single computer, you have a central server that has all the file change histories, and then people check files in and out of there. So this works really well if you're in an office somewhere and you have access to a central server that can store all this stuff, that has access to a reliable network that you can use to access that server, that has access to reliable power. But it doesn't work so well in language documentation situations like many of us are going to have, where we don't necessarily have access to reliable power or internet or anything like that. So it's useful, but not necessarily useful for language documentation. So that brings us to distributed version control systems. And things get a little bit complicated and messy, but really, really powerful with distributed version control systems. So whereas with centralized ones, you have a central server that has all the file changes, in distributed systems, you have what's called clones. So each person's computer has a copy of the repository. So they have an exact clone. They have the entire file change history on their computer. So they don't have to check files in and out of the server. They do everything locally. So it works really, really well. Another benefit to having these clones is that you have multiple copies of the entire project history scattered in multiple areas. So you don't have to worry about a single server going down and taking the entire history of the project with you. You can have multiple people having multiple copies. And instead of checking files in and out of the central server, you push and pull changes to each other. So say Alice creates something that Bob wants. Bob can pull the change from Alice's repository into his own, merge the changes together, and then they both have the same repository. Likewise, if Alice wants to give something to Carol's computer or Carol's repository, she can push the changes there, provided Carol gives her the proper permissions. So that's cloning. The next really major feature of distributed version control systems is branching and merging. It's actually two separate but really, really related features. So branching allows you to sort of create an alternate timeline or an alternate sort of history that you can sort of try things out on without affecting the main analysis of your project. So whereas without a version control system, you would end up just sort of like going straight on through, trying some changes. If it doesn't work, you close the program, and then the changes are lost forever. In a distributed system, or in actually any version control system, but distributed ones make it really, really easy, you can create a branch. So say you have a morpheme that you're not really sure what to do with. You can create a branch saying, hey, I want to look at this morpheme, and then try it some different analyses. If it works, you can merge it back in with the main branch. If it doesn't work, you can just sort of abandon that branch, and it'll still be in the history. So if you go back later, you can say, oh, hey, like, I looked at this, it didn't work. Why didn't it work? And so on. So the branching is really, really powerful. It's really flexible. It allows you to experiment without necessarily interfering with your main data. And then the next really big feature, which I've kind of alluded to already, is that distributed systems don't require networks to operate. So when you get to this one, whereas in a central server you need a network to operate between Mary's computer and the central server and John's computer and the central server, with a distributed one you just need to have some way to get the files from Bob's computer onto Alice's computer. You can do that with burned CDs, you can do that with burned DVDs, you can do it with hard drives, you can do it with USB drives, but you never actually have to be on the internet or on a network. So that's really, really useful in terms of language documentation, because like I said earlier, in a lot of situations we don't have access to power, we don't have access to internet, so what you can do is you can put your data onto a thumb drive and you can mail it to someone that you're collaborating with, or you can have someone in the field mail some project data to you, and so you can work on it at home. So it's really, really helpful for collaboration to not actually need the internet or local networks at all. Obviously they're helpful, but they're not necessary. So distributed version control systems are really, really powerful, but they're not perfect. They have some major flaws, at least currently. Probably the biggest one is that they have a really steep learning curve. As John Hatton says, they can be complicated even for software engineers to figure out. So as linguists, we're not necessarily the most technical people in the world, so it can be kind of difficult to sort of wrap our heads around these crazy software systems. But and that can be really problematic, especially if we're trying to work with community members on these. So if we, as Westerners with sort of experience with computers, have a hard time with these systems, how do we then use those with people that don't really even have experience with computers in the first place? We need to find some way to sort of like simplify things. There's been some progress in systems like that, which I'll talk about in a little bit. A second major problem with distributed systems is that they were designed, obviously, for managing source code. And so the way they merge files and sort of compare files is on a line-by-line basis, which works really well for programming. But for data like XML, which is it's based more on a tree structure, if you go line-by-line, you can actually really mess up your database. So it can get really complicated when you merge files that are in XML format or in a toolbox file format. Toolbox especially is problematic. But luckily enough, programmers actually use a lot of XML as well. So there are tools that allow you to merge files into each other with XML, but that's another tool you're adding on top of the process, so it gets more and more complicated. Likewise, there are tools that allow you to merge toolbox files together, but again, you're adding stuff onto an already sort of complicated workflow. And so, speaking of workflows, since these types of systems are so different from sort of what we're used to, they require sort of new workflows and new ways of thinking about our data and our relationship to our data that I'm not entirely sure how we should approach. If we end up adopting DBCS or distributed systems, we're going to have to think of new best practices for archiving, new best practices for committing files in the field, sort of different things altogether. It's not simply like adding it to the workflow. You have to think about a lot of different things that go along with the type of system that you use. So they're really flexible, but they're also it can be problematic at times. So I've kind of avoided talking about specific systems because I wanted to keep it sort of at a really abstract level, sort of introducing features that are common to all of them. So I want to talk about sort of the three big players that are relevant to DBCS in linguistics. So the first one is called Git. It was developed by the guy who made Linux. So it's really, really powerful. It's really, really popular among programmers. It's way more popular than the other two. So it's really, really powerful, but it has lots of great documentation and great tutorials. But a lot of those tutorials are focused on hardcore programmers, so they're not necessarily approachable for people that don't have experience with that. And so Git is infamously difficult even for programmers to wrap their heads around. It has a lot of idiosyncratic commands, and it's powerful, but kind of crazy to work with. one of the major problems with Git is that it allows you to edit your history really, really easily. So in computer programming, that's really, really helpful if you want to have sort of a clean structure. You want to tell a story with your data. You can sort of massage it a little bit. You can merge branches together that weren't historically merged. You can clean it up, make it pretty. But in language documentation, we don't necessarily want that. And so Mercurial is sort of the big alternative to Git. It has a different approach to history. It doesn't let you change your history very easily. You can do it, but you have to go through a lot of hoops to do it. It's not a very easy thing to do. So in terms of language documentation, that's actually really, really helpful. If we want to keep a historically accurate picture of our files, then we want to not be able to edit them or edit the history very easily. Mercurial is also it's a lot less complicated to use than Git. The commands are sort of more intuitive. It's simpler, it produces prettier output. It tells you gives you nicer information. But on the flip side, because it's less popular than Git, there's not as many tutorials out there for it. You're more on your own trying to figure it out. There's some stuff out there, but nowhere near as many as Git. And lastly, there's actually a distributed version control system built on top of Mercurial that's designed for language documentation. It's called Chorus by the guys that do We Say and Say More and all that stuff, John Hatton. And so this was designed to sort of simplify and abstract away a lot of the problems that come with using a bare DBCS sort of workflow. And so it's a lot simpler to use. It's still just as powerful, if not more powerful, because it's simpler. But there's very little documentation out there about how to use it. So that can be problematic if you're just getting started. It works really, really well with the software it's designed to work with. But if you're sort of trying to use it with like Elan or something like that, it can get a little bit more complicated due to the lack of documentation and tutorials out there. So out of these three, I would probably, depending on the software you use, if you use stuff like We Say, it sort of comes with Chorus built in already. Chorus is actually getting added to Flex. So a lot of the features I've been talking about are actually going to pop up in Flex very soon, actually. But if you use stuff like Elan or Transcriber or Toolbox, you might want to look either at Mercurial or sort of poking around with Chorus to see which one you want to look at. So in conclusion, DBCS can help if we introduce it to our workflows, it can help satisfy sort of the call for collaborative software without really introducing completely new tools. Well, we're introducing new tools, but without sort of building completely new linguistics tools. We can wrap it around current tools that we're already familiar with, that we're already used to using. So we can sort of stay in our comfort zone and then just add a little bit of extra sugar on top of it and get these great benefits that come with collaboration. That being said, we're sort of heading into uncharted territory here. DBCS was designed to work with programming, not really designed to work with linguistics data. So we need to sort of think about different tools or different workflows that are appropriate to linguistics that might not necessarily be appropriate to programming. We need to establish our own best practices and linguistics for using these tools. Here's some resources. I'm not sure if we'll be able to upload slides anywhere. So Git and Mercurial course, the websites for those. Some tutorials for Git and Mercurial. SourceTree is it's a fantastic program. It's for Mac, and they have a Windows beta now. And it's a graphical user interface for Git and Mercurial. So it takes away a lot of the command line scariness that comes with these tools. And these are some books and a paper about Chorus. Thank you.
Plenty of time for questions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first a note, I took my attention away from you for a second. I think you were saying that you weren't sure if there was a place to put your slides.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say for you and for all the other presenters here who might not have put your slides on the laptop down at the registration desk.
Okay.
That's the place to
okay.
do it, so please do that.
Awesome.
Also, I'm interested in the question of diff merge for XML data, pretty obvious thing for linguists.
Right.
Are you aware of any, a while ago I tried to look into this for, if there was a commonly used or commonly available module for Git to handle this, and I wasn't really able to find anything. Are you aware of anything?
Not really sure too much about Git. Usually you...
For any system?
What's that?
How about for any system?
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely tools that are developed especially for merging XML. And then with Git Mercurial, you just sort of say, like, hey, instead of using the built-in diff tool, you use this one instead.
Okay.
So there's like three or four out there.
I found one that looked nice, but it was like for Windows, and it was commercial or something.
Yeah, yeah. What do you use?
I normally use Git, because I'm a software developer.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, there's tools out there for it, so.
Oxygen has built-in XML diff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a free tool which is called Compare Code. Code Compare. It's Windows and it's free.
Yeah.
And it's it also does XML.
Yeah.
But this, well, I mean, one of the key things that is part of Chorus
mm-hmm.
is that if you actually want to merge and not just diff, then you need a way to describe your XML in a way that your schema doesn't describe. You need to be able to say, this lexical entry is, you know, this is an atomic sort of thing. Or you can have multiple example sentences, but you can't have multiple parts of speech or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to inform the three-way merger
yeah.
a lot of semantic information about the files that you're merging. And one of the things, breakthroughs with Chorus, was that we have a very simple way of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that Chorus can very safely do three-way merges and detect conflicts when they happen, because you've added that extra info. So if that ever happens in industry,
mm-hmm.
I'd love to find out about it. As far
yeah.
as we can tell, we're the only ones that have done that.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Actually, a speak comment and a question. Several of us in this room have all collaborated on one project trying to use Flex, and
yeah.
it turns into a cluster mess when
yeah.
everyone's trying to get their databases to merge nicely.
Yeah.
So that sort of is a roadblock to using the power of the program.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, do you have any thoughts on how a version control system could mark a decision tree in analyses? When I'm analyzing a grammar, subsequent decisions are based on an initial hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
So if I realize that there is a mistaken analysis or an alternate analysis higher up on the tree,
mm-hmm.
It would be nice if that could be tracked down all of the subsequent decisions that I make.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm analyzing something as a two-part circumfix,
okay.
and then later I change my mind and think, no, these are probably unrelated morphemes that just coincidentally are in the structure commonly. Changing the parent decision to mark the lower level decisions to make that easier to go back through and clean up all your data. Do you have any thoughts on how?
I'm not too sure about that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where branching would come in.
Mm-hmm.
So in the initial morpheme analysis, you'd sort of like branch off, and you can usually tag different branches and different commits for certain things.
In software developing,
yeah.
It's clear, there's a clear
right.
structure.
Right.
That happens, yeah.
I think you can roll back changes from a specific commit.
Yeah.
So you could go, I want to roll back the changes of this commit back here,
mm-hmm.
But you end up making another commit. So throughout, in between, that change would still be there,
mm-hmm.
but you can easily undo those changes and apply a new commit.
Yeah.
The problem is to your entire database.
Yes,
so if
yeah.
it's a year later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if there's some way to maybe meta tag each subsequent
respond actually to the Flex comment, which is that I had two students give a poster at Scylla in Boston on collaborative databasing using Flex. And what our students did in our field methods class is set up a database on the server so that all the students could log into the server. And then the only, in the poster they have what the glitches were. The big one was if people were working on the same entry. But they ended up not having as many glitches as I know other projects had using Flex collaboratively.
With us, we all started different trains.
Oh, the merge?
And then when
yeah.
we tried to merge it all together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, what our students did is they looked at the database, they had to decide which one they were going to use, and they went with the one that they thought was the richest in a certain way.
Yeah. it's the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've for a long time been using plain old Subversion for all of our XML encoding projects.
Uh-huh.
And we teach all our RAs, you know, checkout, update,
yeah.
commit,
yeah.
and that's all they need to know. I'm just wondering, really in the day-to-day life of a project,
mm-hmm.
with unsophisticated users, how much do you really need to be branching? Because we hardly ever branch. And,
right, well, yeah, you don't necessarily have to, but with distributed stuff, it's so easy to branch. So what a lot of people do is they'll just like, when they're about to start on something new, they'll just branch and then merge it back in because it's so easy.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't necessarily, you don't have to do it, but it's a really powerful tool that you can use.
I'd be worried we'd end up with huge numbers of branches.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want to get the branches like going all the way out, so you just sort of want to like branch off a little bit and then merge it back in, or if it doesn't work out, you just sort of leave it a stranded branch.
The use of branch that we've just introduced in Chorus is if the file format changes. And so maybe the person who's in North America who wants to be using the latest, but their colleagues in, you know, Tibet or something, it's going to be a year before he gets back. We were worried that he might break them. But so we detect that now, and he goes off onto a branch of the new. So everybody using a certain version of Flex will be on a certain branch.
Yeah.
And who tends to the merges? Because during that year, you need to be doing something.
Yeah, so it's not a good idea. You really ought to all be using the same, but it does, it can pull in because newer versions can import, but the work done on the person with the newer version can't be pushed back
right.
down.
To respond to the idea of marking decisions, I think it's, what could be done is sort of features for or tags which could be applied to at the points of branching, yeah, or the points of decisions to say that, yeah, well, if I have a circumfix here, it will be feature one, value one, and if there are two morphemes, will be feature one, value two, and probably you encounter similar sorts of things in other parts of the project, and then you tag them accordingly, so that you could search for all values one and see if all of your decisions are consistent, and maybe switch to the value two in.
I don't know if it's easily implemented in Chorus, but that's a suggestion.
I'm curious to know, when you make that kind of a situation, do you know, I'm going to do this hypothesis and I will know within 2 days whether I regret it or is it more later on you decide?
Later on you reanalyze, so
that's hard.
But if you get into a best practice, I'm thinking maybe of marking what line of thought you're on. It becomes hard, but I don't know, maybe like he's saying, if it's more of a flat namespace tagging system, then you then just look for groups within.
These are the questions, right? Some more comments or something.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
If there aren't any more questions, let's thank our presenters.